All right, welcome to Medi-Call episode 226. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. Oh, man, these are exciting times, Daryl.
I mean, define exciting.
Well, exciting in that, well, first of all, you know, last week we talked about a bunch of big announcements in terms of upcoming sets, upcoming releases. Those are exciting to various degrees. Exciting in terms of, like, oh, there's all these cool new things happening, and exciting in terms of, oh, my God, I'm excited by the fact that Fortnite is happening to this game. Not positive type of excitement necessarily, but excited, you know, agitated a little bit. but when I'm saying exciting, I'm really referring to Historic is awesome right now, and I'm super stoked to play it. I know you're excited about some of the modern shenanigans that are going on. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Dude, so we got to talk about it. But
I played a ton of modern recently, just in my a few downtimes I get between jobs and whatever. It's been kind of my go-to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Modern. You know, I wish that modern was as accessible as Historic is on Arena. Like, I love, you know, we got an iPad recently, and being able to boot up the iPad and play Arena in, like, literally 30 seconds, I can fire up a game of Historic. Historic has that feeling of modern almost now that this Jumpstart set has come out, and now that the Strixhaven Mystical Archives have come out. It's got that, like, those cards of those power levels. Like, I'm playing, like, Darcy's, and I'm playing, like, I used to be playing Brainstorms. I'm playing, you know, Phoenix and, like, Lurrus decks. It's crazy. Esper Sentinels. And so I get that same kind. I can scratch that itch, you know, in just a matter of minutes. Whereas, yeah, you know, firing up MTGO, like, not only takes some time, it also, you know, costs some cash to play a queue.
Coins for your Witcher, yes.
Yeah, but although I do miss, you know, there's this one thing though. The leagues are something that I really do miss. That there's no equivalent of that on Arena yet, and that was one thing that I really love doing on MTGO. That I wish existed on Arena. That you just can't replicate on Arena. So
yeah,
you gotta kind of pick your poison, but I would say modern is a format that is so unique and so special because of, you know, just the diversity and the vastness of the format. And it is the one true Snapcaster Lightning Bolt format out there. You got to love it.
I am going to raise question marks about that statement.
Historically, in our hearts it is, but these days, I don't know if that's even a viable strategy, is it?
I mean, Izzet is one of the better decks, but the Izzet decks often don't have Snapcaster Mage.
I know, it's crazy.
He's relegated to one of off the bench, mostly.
Oh, yeah, that guy's washed up, man. What's he doing these days?
Yeah.
He's second string.
Yeah, like, we'll just jump in. You want to do the promo code real quick, and then we'll just jump right in and talk about Modern?
Yeah, we better do that promo code. So speaking of Modern, speaking of MTGO, excuse me, ManaTraders.com will be a fantastic way to partake in it. Use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. Again, that is on ManaTraders.com. You can subscribe, and you can check out these decks. You can rent these decks, I should say, and then no strings attached. You can return them if they get banned, or, you know, you can try them out and maybe you don't like them and you can just ship them back.
Some of these decks might be hard to rent if you don't get the premium subscription. So
yeah, Modern's not cheap.
I was about to say, I don't know how much you've been following the prices of Modern cards online, Corey, but I'm looking at an Izzet tempo deck. This is kind of one of the pillars that's been kind of emerging from MH2 as a part of the Modern format.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that I'm looking at it and what, 4, 8, 12 cards cost $700.
Well, you certainly don't want to be buying them, right? You don't want to be buying them, so you better rent them.
You don't want to buy Ragavan at 100 tickets a piece.
Oh, God. It's insane.
425 tickets for 4 Ragavan Nimble Pilferer.
And Murktide Region is 100 tickets for a playset, too. So
it is.
We're talking big money.
Kind of out there.
You know, I was outraged at Mishra's Bauble back in the day, and this was before
man,
what,
still $120 for
No, it's more. I'm saying it's more money now, and that's an uncommon, for crying out loud.
Yeah, not
so
great.
Help us out, let's do something about that.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, okay, that's a better way to describe Modern. Modern is the Mishra's Bauble format, the one true Mishra's Bauble format. So
I'll give you that. Yeah. Yeah. Is it tempo decks? They've eschewed Snapcaster Mage to a one of off the bench, if at all. Mostly because you're building around the MH2 one drops, DRC and Ragavan. You're using those as kind of your leverage points, and then you have Murktide Regen as a big finisher. And these tempo decks, there's just not a lot of room for Snapcaster Mage after you include your counter spells and your removal spells and your card advantage engine and expressive iteration. You just don't have a lot of space for Snapcaster.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Snapcaster is mana intensive when your backup plan instead of Snapcaster is expressive iteration. So it would make sense to play Snapcaster if you had something like Kolaghan's Command, because then you're looping, but you're kind of getting your same amount of card advantage off of expressive iteration. Like with Snapcaster, you're only losing out on missing like a backup spell pierce. Otherwise you have second copies of all of your spells in your deck. So you're able to be able to recycle the spells in your deck, or find more copies of the spells in your deck with expressive iteration. So
Snapcaster, old man card, you know, power creep is real.
Boomer card. We're talking about Zoomer, as I call Zoomer Jun. So
that's right.
Yeah, the pillar is the format right now, realistically.
Yeah.
In Modern, you know, since we haven't really gone over this in a while, we haven't looked at all the results.
Yeah.
People kind of consider the four big decks are Hammer Time, the Murktide deck, which some people are calling it Tempo. I don't know. The Crashing Footfalls, Crash Cade deck, the Teemer, Stardust Agent, Make a Bunch of Rhinos deck. And then the fourth one is kind of just a control deck, like just straight up blue-white control, not in the form that we're used to seeing it, which is we're normally used to seeing like Cryptic Commands and Jaces and a couple Teferis and things like that. Snapcaster Mages, kind of almost all of that has been eschewed. We still have Teferi Time Raveler because it's so good against Cascade. But we've gone with we've gone to a Chalice of the Void based strategy, including some number of various different removal spells and like sometimes even mainboard Rest in Peace, sort of using prison pieces instead of trying to trade one for one, using Rest in Peace to blank, you know, Rest in Peace blanks almost everything but Ragavana, something like the Is It Tempo deck, because Darcy can't become a 3/3 flyer, and you know, Murktide Regen is a 7-mana 3/3 at that point. Like, that's not particularly exciting. So then something like the Void turns off most of the one drops out of those decks. So yeah.
Real quick, we are going to continue this conversation on Modern, but I want to just preview the rest of our podcast, because before we get too far into this, like I said, Daryl's been into the Modern thing. We're going to talk about this, especially this Chalice of the Void nonsense, and I've got some experience with this too, but stick around too. We will chat about the historic, the historic metagame as well. So here's just a general dive in our two favorite constructed formats at the moment. But yeah, so Daryl, is this a deck that you've been playing, this Chalice of the Void thing, or just watching?
So I started out watching it. Star City Games did a nice little King of the Hill deal with Todd Anderson and Ross Merriam, where they just kind of took decks at random and played them. And Wafo Tapa went back-to-back challenges a couple weeks ago, playing this blue-white splash, light splash of red control deck. And I'll run down the numbers on it. The red in there was for just two cards, which is 4 Fire Ice and 4 Prismatic Ending. And also a single Crumble to Dust out of sideboard. So it's 4 Teferi Time Raveler, 1 Teferi Hero Dominari, 1 Solitude, 4 Ending, 3 Supreme Verdict, 4 Archmage's Charm, 4 Counterspell, 1 Cryptic, 1 Factor Fiction, 4 Fire Ice, 2 Chalice of the Void, a Rest in Peace, 4 Shark Typhoon, 2 Spreading Seas, and then a bunch of lands, including 2 Castle of Antris and a Celestial Colonnade, and a single Ragoran Triome, kind of rounding those things out. And then the sideboard of Solitude, Rest in Peace, a second Spreading Seas, the 4 Supreme Verdict, 2 Celestial Purge, a Crumble to Dust, 2 Dovin's Veto, and Emrakul the Aeon Storm for all the various mill decks, an Engineer's Plus, 2 Fluster Storm, a Fracturing Gust, and a Mystical Dispute.
Did you say Ragavan Triome?
Ragoran. Ragoran.
Ragoran. Ragoran?
Oh, I said it wrong. Whatever.
Monkey Land.
I like Ragavan Triumph.
You can cast a Ragavan off of a Ragavan Triumph.
You could. That's kind of where it's been. Like a couple red sources in this blue-white deck and playing 4 Fire Ice, which watching Todd Anderson play the deck, it was just always useful, whether it was able to fire down, you know, two of the cheap one drops out of like the Izzet Tempo deck, or kill a couple of the small creatures that might get a hammer or something to that effect, or being able to ice a land to start a counter war, or ice down a large attacker to protect your Teferi, various different things like that. But definitely looks like Wafatapa is leaning into using prison pieces to sort of control the meta, like using Chalice of the Void with between Zumurjun, Crash Cade, the Izzet Tempo deck, and Hammer. You know, there are a lot of decks that have are primarily concentrated at that 0/1 and 2 range. And so being able to just kind of play Chalice 0 or Chalice 1, depending on the matchup, and have these permanent pieces that deal with, you know, a large majority of your opponent's threats and spells, it's just a big boost. It like makes the blue-white control deck more powerful, because it's like only trying to just trade one for one. But this is just something really strange that we've never really seen, kind of eschewing Path to Exile and Lightning Bolt in these control decks, because of the idea that Chalice of the Void is just so strong in the current meta. And then All you have to do is really figure out how you're going to clean up Urza's Saga, which you're playing a couple Spreading Seas to be able to get the free roll off of it, to be able to Spreading Seas your opponent's Urza's Saga and just stone rain them.
That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an insanely strong thing. I also saw, like, this is something you have to keep in mind with Urza's Saga. If it's on Chapter 1, you can ice Urza's Saga in their upkeep as it goes to Chapter 2 to prevent them from being able to make Construct that turn. So you can also kind of free roll shutting down their constructs from Urza's Saga for a turn to be able to like move forward.
Because it happens at the draw step, doesn't it?
It happens in your main phase, actually.
What?
I think.
Oh, hang on. Let me pull it up. I think it's draw. Urza's...
You might draw step.
It's really weird because everything else that does something like this is an upkeep trigger. And I don't understand why these sagas are not. But yeah, maybe for stuff like this. As enters the battlefield, and after your draw step, add a lower counter. Yeah, so you can get it. You can do things to it during the upkeep before it triggers. So yeah, that's really fancy and nice.
Yeah,
there's a lot of really tricky things you can do that keep Urza's Saga in check, and that card would be really oppressive without it. But stuff like that, the icing it, and then these decks also have access to wear and tear, if that wasn't enough, and wear and tear is a huge tempo swing, because this thing's an enchantment that creates artifacts and finds artifacts, and wear and tear is just like a one-sided like F you. It's so good.
Yeah, it's like Stone Rain kill your token, like Stone Rain Doomblade.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Yeah, Wafatapa eschewed playing any wear and tears in his sideboard in the version that took a couple challenges. But realistically, if you were into that, you could certainly play wear and tear. He played his fifth sweeper was Fracturing Gust. You kill all the Urza's Saga tokens plus the sagas.
Nice.
And gain some life off of it. But that's kind of how the control deck is attacking, which is a very interesting angle. And then you just have like decks we've been seeing around, like Burn has always been around. Elementals has been around with sort of these Crash Cade style decks. If the mid range decks are good, Tron will come back. And then, you know, if Jund is high, Tron will come back, which will necessitate Izzet coming back, because Izzet's able to interact with Tron. And so you do. Modern is very cyclical. And then you just have your kind of out there sideways, you know, combo decks like Indomitable Creativity and Living End.
Yeah.
The things that are doing that. And then, you know, the ever-present various different Grixis decks, or Lurrus decks, Black, Red, and Grixis. The Lurrus decks have been playing Dress Down, because Lurrus is just the best thing that these mid-rangey and tempo decks can do. But anything Grixis Shadow style or anything with Shadow has been including Dress Down with Lurrus, just because you can make your Shadows bigger. And that's kind of become their Teemer Battle Rage. It kills all of the Urza Saga constructs because they're all 0/0s that inherit a power and toughness from an ability. So Dress Down is like a very clean answer to Urza Saga that also kind of allows your Shadows to kind of run wild on the game if you're playing Grixis Shadow specifically.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I'm curious about that Dress Down stuff. So Dress Down, if you haven't seen the card, it's a 1 in a blue flash enchantment. Creatures lose all abilities basically, right? And then draw cantrip when it comes into play, sacrifice it to end a turn.
Correct.
So what it does is it turns it turns the Death Shadows into 13/13s.
Correct.
It's like a Teemer Battle Rage, but it doesn't give them trample, which is pretty important, I think.
Yes, it is.
I haven't encountered this. I think it's cool. I think it's clever, and obviously it's recurrable with Luris. But in this type of matchup, like you just pop out like a Shark Typhoon token and then chump block it. Now that deck's got like tons of removal that it could just like pick it off, but it's got to be, you know, it's got to be ready for that.
Yeah. Well, I think the big key of Dress Down as like a card that's been we've been seeing play with these Luris shells is its secondary feature against Urza's Saga. Like you get to use it as a team or battle rage that also like clears the table of all
destructible. Yeah. Okay. That's pretty clever.
The construct tokens are 0/0s that have the ability this creature gets +1/+1 for every artifact you control.
Yeah.
So pop out like 2, 3, 4 Urza Saga tokens. You flash in a Dress Down. It kills all the tokens. Your shadow is bigger. You bash them for 13. And like, if you have both, you just kind of probably win the game at that point.
Yeah.
But if, even then, it's just like a 2-mana, you know, wrath the board if they have a bunch of constructs.
Yeah.
And then like Luris can recur it every turn. So, like you can. You have Urza Saga locked up as long as Luris is in play.
That makes sense. You know, yeah. as more and more cards become available to Modern, like these decks have so much more access to stuff that's just really harsh to these like 1- and 2-mana centric decks, which is like a majority of Modern. You know, like Grixis Death Shadow is like public enemy number one when it comes to that kind of thing. Like that deck just like it's basically a legacy deck when it comes to mana cost. Like everything costs 1 and 2 mana. And like this deck, I'm looking at the list and like you're playing Chalice of the Void's main deck in this control deck that we're talking about. You know, it like just preys on these 0 and 1 mana spells. You've got Fire and Ice for all these like really low to the ground creatures, and then you've got 4 Archmage's Charm, which is just like a viable counter spell that can just like steal their, you know, their main threats. You take the hammers away from your opponents, you take their you know, anything away from the kitchen decks.
Yeah, you take their toys.
Yeah, it's like there are just so many like there's so many so much versatility in the these decks that they can just like disrupt the aggressive decks in so many ways. That's like the control decks like 3 years ago even like it was just like miserable to play control in Modern against those super aggro decks, and now it's like it's just comical like what you have access to compared to that.
Yeah, it's just like the one master set, because it's like people I think at first like there's that the master set where Fire Ice and all these new, you know, threats got introduced.
Yeah.
At first people were like, okay, we have shiny toys and these new threats.
Yeah.
But I think it's just been a long, long time and people are starting to try it now. Like it's been such a long time since Fire Ice was legal in a format that it saw play in that people really understood the power of like that specific split card, because people play Forked Bolt. Like that was just a card played. And, you know, a 1-mana sorcery versus a 2-mana instant, the 2-mana instant definitely benefits different types of decks. But then your 2-mana, you know, Forked Bolt is also just not dead in the matchups where Forked Bolt is bad. So, like, that was the – you play Forked Bolt in your Grixis Shadow deck, say, because the, you know, X1s were a thing. But then you play it against Tron, you're just like, oh, I have a Forked Bolt in my deck. That's miserable. Whereas now, if your Forked Bolt is Fire Ice, you're like, okay, I can ice their Tron land, they take them off 3 mana, and then, like, cantrip and see what I can set up for next turn.
Yeah, you time walk them on the turn that they're going to play Karn, right?
Yeah.
It's, like, awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of, I didn't even say Prismatic Ending, which is yet another card that plays into the plan of, like, F your, like, aggressive deck. It's like, there's just so many cards that not only deal with the hyper aggressive strategies, but that scale perfectly well for the like the big strategies, because all of these cards like also have function in like the Tron matchups, for example, you know, like they still do things when they're not just keeping you alive against the like Monastery Swift Spear decks.
Yeah, and like the early turns you can like ending a map or something if they don't crack it, or like that you get they play it on turn one, you can like ending their map and like greatly change their game plan.
Get an Oblivion like, Ring.
Oblivion Stone.
Oblivion Stone, yeah. I mean, you got Triumphs.
Yeah, absolutely. So like but yeah, just the vast the array of tools has made both of the threats required the threats to become more diverse and more powerful, but also just giving you these answers that actually can answer all of them now. So it's actually I feel like
you know, some of these cards don't feel particularly good to play against when you don't, when your answers don't line up, or like your deck is just poor against them. Like, you know, Karn decks are pretty good against mid-range in general, but like mid-range, the Karn decks, if they don't get out too far ahead and these constructs start building up, their only answer is really Oblivion Stone, because something, the other thing they would use is Ugin, and Ugin doesn't kill the constructs because it's, they're all colorless. So like, you don't get the free roll of like Ugin minus eat the constructs. You kind of have to figure out how to manage your way around that. So it is like, there's definitely checks and balances, but it feels like Modern is in like one of the healthier places that it's been.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, faster cards like aren't particularly good, and like, or slower cards aren't particularly good. Like, we're not seeing as many Jaces anymore, or in Teferis, like Teferi fives, just because like, yeah, those cards are powerful, but like, you have to be able to interact, and you want to mostly be an instant speed deck. So like, maybe like people are SGOing it for Factor Fictions and cycling Shark Typhoons and stealing constructs and stuff like that with like your Archranger's Charms. And so like, I've seen people talk about like, this is the death of Celestial Colonnade, that blue white control is a deck, and like, people are playing one Colonnade maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I've even seen the new blue land in place of Colonnades, the Hall of the Storm Giant, I think.
Yeah, Hall of the Storm Giant makes the 7/7 with Ward 3. Ward 3 is just kind of insane. It's a really fast clock. And it just comes into play untapped. Like, you don't often need mana fixing to make double white. Very, very rarely. Like, you have Supreme Verdict, that's it. But like, at most, you're usually casting one white spell a turn cycle, like, yeah. If that.
Yeah.
So like, this is the ability for your man land to come into play untapped and not disrupt your curve, and just be a man land too, is just like very good.
Yeah. So as far as health of the format goes, yes, there's a lot of diversity. I think that we're seeing a new, you know, a new bar for like what the expected, like, you need this playset to play Modern is. And like, whereas that used to be like Tarmogoyf back in the day, like if you want to play like aggressive, like, it seems like most decks are centered around like four Regavans, unfortunately. A lot of these control decks have like some pretty like pricey play sets of blue cards. Like Archmage's Charm is no joke these days, you know. There's a lot of cards, and a majority of them came out in the last couple of years, so fortunately they're still in print. There's, you know, it's not cheap, you know, so that's the thing. So yeah. It brings me back to that manatraders.com. Get that subscription, Card Knock Life Podcast, 14% off for 3 months.
Yeah, but, like, to speak of the actual played games health of the format.
Yeah, for it, sure. Yeah.
It feels very good to me from all the experiences I've had. I haven't played a game where I'm just like, oh, this is miserable, and it feels unstoppable. It's like, yeah, sometimes you have that miserable game where you, like, draw the Fire Ice part of your deck and the constructs line, like if you're playing Urza Saga deck, constructs just line up badly for you and you don't draw it. But like, that's the same thing as just like, you know, losing the burn on the double Goblin Guide Starter or whatever, you know, like those things will happen. Sometimes you get got because you're playing a deck with, you know, all answers. And I've played the aggressive decks too. I've played some burn. I've played some elementals. I've played some Death Shadow. I've played some hammer. Like, The decks are all, they all feel like they're doing a thing, and sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, the answer decks are put to the test. The question decks are asking their question, and it doesn't seem like an unreasonable window for like the cost of the format, like the expected mana cost of the format. It looks like we're asking, you know, the questions are being asked at a pace that, you know, the answers can keep up with. It's not like, you know, we're sorely missing like Swords to Plowshares now, or like we're missing Swords to Plowshares and like the format is completely unhealthy because we don't have it. It's like, yeah, we don't have Swords to Plowshares, and people are kind of estuing Fast Exile because we're trying this new thing with using Chalice of the Void. It's like a functional replacement. So it's like, totally fine.
Yeah, right on. All right, shall we change gears a little bit here?
Absolutely. Let's talk about Historic.
Historic Jumpstart came out on the 26th. Historic Jumpstart, for those who aren't familiar, is yet another Jumpstart product. We had one in paper and on Arena some time ago, I can't say. The Arena equivalent of it is a 2,000 gold or 400 gem pack. or I guess it's an entry event. You can't actually buy the packs, but you buy the entry into the event, and it clashes two semi like curated deck halves together into a limited event. And so then it's just play until you're done, and you resign when you want to. And when you get a win, you earn a card, and you can earn up to two cards from those wins. Both of them are rares from the Jumpstart releases. And there are roughly 770 some new cards infused into Historic, which is just insane. Some of them from the Modern Horizons and Masters sets, which is really cool. Lots of them extremely powerful new inclusions into Historic. So as expected, they're making big impacts on that format, since a lot of the new releases, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, after we've seen like some really powerful standard sets like Throne of Eldraine come out and just make incredible impacts on Modern and Standard, WotC has been powering standard sets down. I mean, we've all felt that, right? So like the last few standard sets have felt a little bit lackluster, but appropriately so compared to like Throne of Eldraine. More recently they've come out and felt largely unnoticed in Historic. You know, we haven't really seen much, with the exception of like the Strixhaven Mystical Archives. Some of those like Brainstorm have made huge impacts, Faithless Looting type of things. So this has done a lot for Historic. In fact, there's quite a few new decks popping out and lots of brewing going on. Now, when you play on Arena, there's two different ways to play Magic. There is traditional and there's best of one. So they wanted to make this as accessible as possible for players to just like hop on, fire up a game and go. So best of one, I think the purists of the game would say is not really Magic. Okay, because to play a game of Magic, there is a lot relying on whoever wins the die roll and goes first. And when it comes to matchups, your sideboard does a lot to kind of solve problems that go with that poor game one experience or that poor matchup experience, kind of evens things out a little bit. I can't imagine playing Modern and playing best of one and dealing with a metagame that's just full of like Neoform decks type of thing. It'd be a lot of that kind of nonsense. So what happens in Arena is there's a lot of that going on in the best of one metagame. And so following Historic Horizons, Historic Jumpstart Horizons, that's a real mouthful, the best of one deck du jour is this very miserable Tybalt's Trickery deck that is based on Throes of Chaos. Do you know this card, Daryl?
That's the like 4-mana Cascade Retrace card?
Yep, that's it. This deck does literally nothing until turn 4.
Okay.
When it casts Throes of Chaos.
So we're cascading into Tybalt's Trickery.
Tybalt's Trickery. And just finds one of many large payoff spells in the deck. So I can list some of them off, but you can let your imagination run wild with what are the possibilities here. Ugin, the Spirit Dragon. Scholar of the Lost Trove. Sarah's Emissary, which is one of the new ones here. Enters battlefield, choose a card type. You and creatures you control have protection from the chosen card type. Mm-hmm. Ulamog. Alarun's Epiphany, that's when you take an extra turn, get two birds. Emergent Ultimatum, Magma Opus, Omniscience. And then somewhere I'm playing the Tarrasque, which is the 10/10. When it attacks, you fight a creature, and it has haste and ward 10. So it's pretty miserable. Basically, they get to 4 mana, and then they roll the dice and see if they win the game. It's stupid. But in sideboard of games, you just find a counterspell and then and then you do fine. Or Dranith Magistrate is really good against them. So people are like mainboarding those and Gravedigger's Cages and things like that. Yeah. So anyways, if you want to avoid that, I highly recommend you play best of three. However, I think that we're going to see a ban of Tybalt's Trickery in best of one pretty soon for Historic, because this deck is like 50% of the matchups right now when you go on there.
I mean, I just feel like Tybalt's Trickery just can't be a card that, like...
It's dumb.
It's just needs to be in a format. Like, I just don't see a world where that's a thing that needs to happen.
Yeah. But that said, I had to get that out of the way because I need to acknowledge it. It exists, right? That said, yep. The format is in a good place. It's really cool. And prior to this, there was a ton of Jeskai control. In fact, Historic was just a ton of control. There was just shit tons of Torrential Gear Hulk, like memory lapse stuff going on. And then Archmage's Charm entered the format now, and I thought that it would just be pushed to the extreme. But it's not, really. There's a lot of other things happening. In fact, like, the Soul Herder decks are even viable. They're not exceptional, but they're viable. I see people playing them to, like, some results, but they're happening. And so in the last couple days, last week, I should say, I've been playing, like, just about as much as I could get my hands on, because I saved up a bunch of gold and just, like, just played the hell out of this, and I've tested a ton of decks. And so a couple of them have risen to the top, so I wanted to just kind of touch on the ones that I think are the most viable.
Sure.
And so, you know what? Before I do that, I better talk about the ones that I think are not terribly viable, because there's some fun ones that I tried. So the first one is the Soul Herder deck, I think, is okay. And I'm disappointed to report that. I think maybe it's missing, like, one or two pieces that really seal the deal. It's really good at drawing a whole bunch of cards and gaining a lot of life, but that doesn't kill your opponent. So that was kind of sad. If you like value, it does value, but it doesn't win the game.
That's always been the problem with Soul Herder, is, like, it just, the game doesn't end. Like, you amass a collection of cards vastly superior to your opponent because you have more of them.
Yeah.
They're all kind of mediocre 1/1s and 2/2s. And, like, you have to beat down a Soul Herder. So, like, that's why in Modern you saw a bunch of decks splashing a fourth color if they could once Triumphs came out.
Yeah.
Because you get your finishers from the fourth color, whether it be a Siege Rhino that you could just blink ad infinium, or, like, playing the Kiki Jiki combo because it fits so well in your deck, especially after the advent of Imperial Recruiter.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. I think, you know, I'm not sure what in Bant colors would really, like, solve that problem.
I mean, I could answer, but it's already banned in Historic.
What?
It's Time War.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, being able to pair Eternal Witness, like, or Timeless Witness with Time Warp and Ephemerate, would fix it. Like, you just take all the turns with Time Warp.
Yeah, and maybe just, like, a ridiculous mana base would allow for more colors, but I just don't think it's really there. So, we'll see. I think, the version I've been playing is a Collected Company-based one, so it doesn't even have the Timeless Witness, the 4-mana Timeless Witness, so maybe I'm doing it wrong. That could be.
Yeah, like, if you're going to build Soul Herder, you need to, like, leverage the most powerful part of the Soul Herder deck in Modern, which is the whole Eternal Witness Ephemerate loop. It's really, like, Bant Ephemerate. And Soul Herder, like, over time has gone from, like, a 4-of to, like, 1-of if you're playing a 6-card version, or a 2-of. Because you had an Elodomri's called Tear for it. Like, you play, like, one Soul Herder, one Thassa.
Yeah.
So you had two different copies, one of which was indestructible. But it was really, like, the core of the deck was, like, 4-Witness, 4-Ephemerate. And you just use that to loop whatever, to, like, loop Eldamri's Call to go get your singleton that fit the moment, whatever it was you needed, whether it was Venser or Soul Herder or whatever. And then just, like, use Ephemerate plus Eternal Witness to, like, push the game to its natural end.
So,
I think they're missing out by not playing Timeless Witness.
So I don't want to spend too much time on this one because we did talk about this last time. But it is a decent deck, and it's certainly fun to play, but I don't think it's entirely competitive. Phoenix is interesting. Phoenix gets Dragon's Rage Channeler. And I think that does help quite a bit, but it still suffers the same weakness, which is graveyard hate.
I don't actually remember.
No, Ragavan is not in the format. But with Darcy, you also get the Delirium damage spell, the 6-mana damage spell, or the 6 damage spell for 1 mana. Excuse me. What is that called?
Unholy Heat.
Yes, thank you. Unholy Heat, which is a big deal, but once again, weak to graveyard hate. So there's an awful lot of graveyard hate running around because there are a lot of people playing Darcy themselves. So with that, they want to be playing Soul Guide Lantern. I think that's what it's called, the artifact, right?
Yep,
Soul Guide
Lantern. Exile the card.
Yeah, because that's just an easy way to hit Delirium and solves problems with your opponent doing similar. So that's hard. So I think Phoenix is still competitive, but you have to be a little tricky. Maybe you play like some Crackling Drake and things like that. Elves got a couple of new tools. There is a Planeswalker that I think is worth considering. It's a 3-mana Planeswalker that seeks some elves. It's good. It helps against like control decks and things like that. And then there's also, in place of Elvish Visionary, there's an elf that has reach that seeks an elf when it comes into play for 2 mana, which is a big upgrade for the elves deck. Once again, elves still struggles to wrath spells. So if you have those explosive turn or explosive hands where you just like blow up and knock them dead and on turn 3, you win the game. Otherwise, you just suffer the worst blowouts to Anger of the Gods and you fold them and you go home. So you know what you're getting when you sign up for that deck. Now, we talked a little bit about the Vesper Lark combo off the cast, and I think we need to address that. So that one's interesting because Davriel's Withering is target creature perpetually gets -1/-2. Now, perpetually is interesting because it is something that is, remains on the card in the graveyard, in the library, everywhere. So when you target a Vesper Lark with -1/-2, you can basically blink the Vesper Lark infinitely to gain life with ETBs from Soul Warden.
Yep.
And put counters on your creatures with Heliod, Sun Crowned, and basically just blast them dead.
I mean, you can also just drain your opponent out with like a Blood Artist effect.
Yeah, Blood Artist too. All right. So then there's other tricks in here. So I've seen people play along with Scurry Oak. So Scurry Oak is whenever one or more +1/+1 counters are put on Scurry Oak, create a 1/1 green squirrel token.
Okay.
And so what are they doing? Oh, Scurry Oak and Prosperous Innkeeper plus Soul Warden and Heliod Sun Crown.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of cards they're trying to like enable. So it feels like there's too many cards in that combo.
Yeah, it's like all the cards like independently are decent enough to like, you know, play with. So it's not like, you know, with the modern versions of the like those Abzan combos, like there's a lot of cards that are just pretty bad on their own. In this case, like Soul Warden is like serviceable and kind of like, you know, pivots between the two. So there's a lot of like cards that like kind of you know, function in both cases, and they all fit into Collected Company. So it's kind of nice. But overall, the deck is pretty awkward and pretty inconsistent. And the fact that you rely on a Davriel's Withering to go off and with one of the combos is like pretty bad. So I wasn't very impressed with this one, but I think there's probably something to do here that you know, that might rely on, you know, some more finagling or maybe a new piece, new tool. Okay. So all that said, the decks that I was most excited about, there were a couple of them. So for best of one, Death and Taxes, the mono white Death and Taxes was very good. Esper Sentinel is an extremely powerful card and a very welcome addition to the format. That one is super strong against a lot of the control and combo shenanigans that were going on in best of one. However, when you go up against the decks that are just like, I'm going to play best of one, I'm just going to smash face with like mono green, it was really tough. So that one I thought was like a good, like, you know, 60 to 70% like win rate against like a lot of the meta there when I was in best of one. But I was mostly playing traditional, and there were two decks that I really, really liked out of all of them. One of them was just like straight up Jund. And I think you'll like this deck, Daryl. This one, like in the early turns, was playing Dragon's Rage Channeler, early removal with like Fatal Push and Blood Chief Thirst, discard Inquisition and Thoughtseize.
Sure.
And then it had Kroxa and Bone Crusher Giant.
Okay, but then what are we green for?
What's that?
Green, green for that.
There's only one green card in the entire deck. Okay. Clothis, God of Destinies.
Okay. I mean, that's a pretty damn good card to be in green.
Very
for.
Good card. Yeah, and it's easy enough to do it because you want the Fabled Passage in here just for Dragon's Ranch Channeler.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, might as well. And then the top end of this is like you got 4 Seasoned Pyromancer, which is brand new to the format and very good here.
Like
and then your Planeswalker package, Davriel, Soulbroker, and Chandra, Torch of Defiance. So this deck came from...
I don't One of those cards does. What the hell does Davriel do again?
Davriel. This one's really interesting. So Davriel is a 4-mana 4 loyalty planeswalker. I'm going to skip its first ability. I'm going to come back to that one. It's minus... I'm going to skip its second ability. Its first ability is +1. Until the end of your next turn, whenever an opponent attacks you and or planeswalkers you control, they discard a card. If they can't, they sacrifice an attacking creature.
Holy hell, that's a strong ability.
Yeah, and it's only one, so it doesn't matter how many creatures they attack with. They only have to discard one card.
That's strong. Less strong.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was every creature made that trigger. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, and then it's -3 is target creature perpetually gets -3/-3.
That's pretty good. What's the ability you skipped?
Okay, so that's a -2, and it's straight up Hearthstone. And so I had to pull up a second page for this because it's except...
Wait a minute. What do you mean it's straight up Hearthstone?
It is accept one of Davriel's offers, then accept one of Davriel's conditions. So what happens is when you click on it...
Like a Sockus potion. Okay.
Yeah, when you click on it, 3 offers pop up on your screen, and they come from like a list of, I think, 8 possible offers. And then 3 conditions pop up out of a list of 8 possible conditions. So the offers could be draw 3 cards, conjure a Manor Guardian in your hand, return 2 target creatures from your random creatures from your graveyard to your hand. They perpetually gain +1/+1. Return a random creature card with the highest mana value from among cards in your graveyard to the battlefield. You get an emblem with creatures you control get +2/+0. You get an emblem with spells you cast cost 1 black less to cast. You get an emblem with Davriel planeswalkers you can control have +2 draw a card. You get an emblem with whenever you draw a card, you gain 2 life, which is my personal favorite when paired with Klothys, because you can just like basically keep, drawing removal, killing stuff off, and just wait it out and win the game.
I mean, the Davriel planeswalkers one is really strong.
Yeah.
What is the conjure a mana thingamajig?
The Manor Guardian. The Manor Guardian is a creature. It's a 2 and a black for a 4/3 creature. And when it dies, both players seek a 2-mana spell from their library.
Eh, not a fan of that card.
Yeah, it's not great. Yeah, I saw that. I thought it was going to be like a big 8/8 or something. I was disappointed. But so now its conditions are usually stuff that you can tolerate in the late game. But there are times where you get 3 of them and you're like, oh, those are all kind of rough. Like they're pretty big. So they include you lose 6 life, exile 2 cards from your hand. If fewer than 2 are exiled this way, each opponent draws cards equal to the difference. Sacrifice 2 permanents. Each creature you don't control perpetually gains +1/+1. Ooh. You get an emblem with creatures you control get -1/-0.
That's fine.
You get an emblem with spells you cast cost 1 black more to cast.
Ooh.
You get an emblem with whenever you draw a card, exile the top 2 cards of your library. Or you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life for each creature you control.
That one's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so like in the late game, usually sacrificing some lands or, having to pay 1 extra black for your Thought Seizes and stuff is like not a big deal at all.
But, so when you straight up Hearthstone, like how much does the card cost? Like, because it has like condition.
4 mana.
Oh, it's always 4 mana.
2 black, yeah.
Oh, that's not terrible.
Yeah, no, it's very good. It's really hard to evaluate without knowing those conditions and like really playing it a lot and kind of seeing how it works. But for the most part, I'm playing it and +1-ing it up to 5. And having a 4-mana planeswalker that has 5 loyalty from the get-go that like protects itself, kind of, is really strong.
Yeah.
So I've been really happy with him. But overall, this deck has been really strong. I've been super surprised by it. Lots of strong removal. Unholy Heat is just a powerhouse. Card's nuts.
Unholy Heat is a stupid card. Like, it was. I think it was kind of a mistake, but I digress.
Yeah, it is. And then I have just one more, and this one I think you're gonna find really interesting. I think there's a lot of buzz about this one, so maybe some people are already familiar with this list, but for those that aren't, it's super spicy. I just removed a card from it on accident.
Spice me up, Buttercup. Let's go.
Okay, green-red shamans.
I mean, I like shamans.
Yeah, so here's the core of this one. There's a card called Harmonic Prodigy.
Okay.
Harmonic Prodigy is 1 and a red for a 1/3 human wizard with prowess. If an ability of a shaman or another wizard you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time.
That's good.
Here are some of the all-stars. Yeah. Obviously, you're running four of this guy since the deck's built around him.
Yep.
Burning Tree Emissary is a shaman.
That's dumb.
Yep. Goblin Anarchomancer is a shaman. Doesn't have a trigger ability, but it helps with the whole, like, you know, value plan. That's the one that says each spell you cast that's red or green costs one less to cast.
Sure, I'm here for it.
Now, here's the big one, the big payoff. Rage Forger is a shaman. Rage Forger is the Lorwyn uncommon. Two in red for a 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each other shaman creature you control. So that triggers twice. And this also triggers twice. Whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it attacks, you may have that creature deal 1 damage to target player or planeswalker.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is an extremely fast tribal deck. It's nuts. So that's basically the plan, is Harmonic Prodigy and Rage Forger. But there's other shenanigans. Seasoned Pyromancer is a shaman. Triggers twice with the draw.
Okay.
Elvish Visionary is a shaman, triggers twice with the draw. And then it's got Collected Company in it so that we can basically you main phase Collected Company all the time because you could hit Burning Tree and the Harmonic Prodigy at the same time and then get a free Coco. Get your 4 mana back.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, so it's really crazy. Like turn 3 you're putting them into lethal zone. So like the elves deck, this is one though that struggles against the 3 mana removal spells in the format, but otherwise is pretty resilient given that it's got Collected Company and some creatures that can have more than 3 toughness.
That's insane. Wow.
So anyways, that's Historic in a nutshell. That's kind of what I've got so far. I think the Rakdos Arcanist decks are pretty strong too. Just the general like black-red shells built around Darcy are good. I like the bigger Jund one personally. There's definitely some control stuff out there. But lots of things happening right now. It's a cool place to be.
That is awesome. Yeah.
So. All right, I think we should wrap up on that.
Sounds good to me.
But we come back next time with some more talk about some modern. I'll hear some more about how that wraps up. We got some spoilers. Yeah, we got some a whole new set coming out soon. I'm sure that will have
something or other. Yeah,
Innistrad something. Yeah, it's the is it called the Wild Hunt? No, that's the Witcher. The Midnight Haunt.
Yeah, Innistrad Midnight Haunt.
Yeah. Oh, did you see that goat card? There's like a brutal looking goat murderer.
Oh yeah, that thing is creepy as hell. I don't remember I'm gonna go look for the name of it real quick.
I got it saved because it was like the Flesh Taker. Yeah. In the cornfield with a butcher knife. Man.
Sure.
He's a human assassin though.
Nightmare. It's just like every single random serial killer like had their weird mask thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this guy has.
Wow. Okay. That's brutal, man.
Yeah. Nope. I'm out on this thing. Like, not that it's a bad card, but I'm out on it. It's too creepy for me. I'm not here for it.
It's very creepy. Give me that playmat.
Oh my, no, I don't want to play against anybody with that play, man. I would be staring at it the whole time, freaking out. Oh, no, thank you. Corey, I don't like you anymore.
All right, man. Well, talk to you later.
Later.
Bye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardnock Life content.